It's not easy having special learning needs such as ADD, autism, or learning disabilities. And it's not easy being the parent of a child with learning roadblocks. Your heart breaks when you hear your child say, "Mommy, I'm stupid. I can't learn that. Do I have to go to school?" If this has happened to you, you're in the right place. Our host, Dr. Carrie Miller, created this show to give parents the information they need to help their child succeed in school. Parents all around the country tune in to Special Kids School Talk to be uplifted by stories of hope, courage, and success. Kids just like yours are tackling their educational problems and are succeeding. Make yourself comfortable. The support you've been asking for is moments away. Here's our host, Dr. Carrie Miller.
Welcome to Special Kids School Talk. Thanks for joining us. I'm Dr. Carrie, your host. Today we'll be talking with a psychotherapist and family coach who's going to help us understand how students can make greater progress in dealing with the difficulties in their lives through a holistic approach. This approach emphasizes mind, body, and spirit. I've asked Lillian Campbell to join us today. Lillian's a specialist in helping families affected by conditions such as autism, attention deficit disorder, and other challenges. Children and adults with these conditions often have challenging behaviors, such as tantrums, aggressive behaviors, difficulties in focusing and concentrating, not following through on instructions. Now, Lillian's program focuses on these key difficulties. She uses a holistic approach. And what she found is that there's a rapid change in behaviors, and that's the amazing result. Welcome to the show, Lillian.
Thanks, Dr. Carrie, for having me.
Pleased to have you here. I'd like to encourage parents to phone into the show with specific questions if they're concerned about their child's development. If you have questions for Lillian, my call-in number is 1-347-994-2276. Or you can submit your questions via the chat room. Now, Lillian, I'd like to start with an overview of your holistic approach. Please share with the listeners why you use a holistic approach and then go into what areas you focus in on.
Well, the why is because I noticed years and years of just working in a certain direction that that was not giving the desired results. And I noticed when I was taking in more of an holistic approach that was giving a much quicker result using diet, just studying the diet, exercise, peer relationships, family relationships, sleep patterns, intake of vitamins, hobbies, just taking a picture of the whole environment and everything the child is connected to.
Well, that does sound like it's a holistic approach. I think you've mentioned some amazing things here. Let's go into each one of them in some detail. So let's start, how about we start with diet? What kinds of dietary issues should parents be aware of?
Well, a couple of things, such as refined sugar. I'm sure a lot of parents have been, or maybe some parents have been already hearing or reading more about this, but a lot of kids with autism or ADHD may be triggered by refined sugars, but also a lack of proteins in their diet or non-organic foods, the pesticides, the sodas, and again, the refined sugars. Wheat, gluten, casein. So all these products may trigger the behavior of a child. And, there has been a lot of research, and the research does not always say the same thing, but a lot of research does tell that when you give a child, for example, a diet that does not contain any gluten or any casein, and, for example, no refined sugars and organic foods, that the behavior may change in a positive way. Children may become more focused, more concentrated. They get less difficulties with the hyperactivity in their brain. So it can create a lot of benefits. And, of course, also if the diet is affecting their physical well-being, it may also affect that they just feel better and have more energy physically.
Well, I certainly agree with you that there's a lot of controversy on diet. Wow, I tell you, lots of research, or maybe there's some research out there. I can't really speak that there's lots of research. But it does tend to conflict with each other. You know, there is some research says it helps, some says it doesn't. I absolutely agree with that. It's so confusing for a parent. What do you advise? Let's take us maybe through a case, someone you worked with. Because the area of diet is so tricky. You can't just look at a person and go, oh, taking wheat out of your diet is really going to help you. So how
right.
do you help? Yeah, how do you help parents? What process do you use? Do you first start with asking for like 3 days' worth of what they're eating, and then you look at that and you say, how about we suggest taking this thing out and see what happens? Tell us how you do that.
Yeah, that's a good question, and I just want to get back to what you just mentioned about that it is confusing for parents, because there's, of course, always there's so much literature, so much information, and best thing is always to look at what works for your child, and that is also what we do with the diet. So not every child is the same, of course. Just first I look at what is the diet at this time for this child, and what are the behaviors that usually pop up after certain foods are eaten. Certain foods you will see respond pretty quick, such as the sugars, but also if there's a lack of protein, you may see a quick response within the child, which can be a lot of energy or no energy, etc. So I actually evaluate, like, what is going on in the diet right now, and then we can try. For example, first we can try to take out the dairy gets out of the system the most quickest. So for a week, it may be already out of the system. And then we can see if there's anything that is already changing in the child's behavior. And best is for the parents to use a log, for example, and to just write down anything different in the morning. Was there anything different in the afternoon or evening? Any type of behaviors, how a child was focusing when it was doing its schoolwork, or how it was playing, etc. And then, if it's going well, you can, or not, you can, of course, decide to do the next step, and that's gluten. You can remove that from the diet after a month, after you eliminated the milk. It may take up to 6 months before the gluten will be out of the body. So you may...
Wow.
Yeah, that takes a long time. So you want to try to do that, yeah, for about 6 months. So when you try that for at least 6 months, and I know it's not easy, and I know especially with parents who already have to do with so many things, it takes a little extra, it takes quite some time to do your grocery shopping because gluten is in a lot of products. But once you get the hang of it, and certain stores such as Whole Foods and etc. are great for that, then you can have great recipes, great foods, and the best thing is if it pays off and you see that your child is actually changing. The metabolism, the digestion is becoming easier, the behavior may be affected by that, the child may be more relaxed, more focused, more easygoing, and you may experience a different child by just doing that.
That's amazing. Can you share with us what foods contain gluten? I know wheat does.
Yeah, the processed foods, of course. So it's like the breads, cookies, pastas, certain candies.
Candy, wow.
Yeah, the gluten is in a lot of products, but also it is in a lot of products. It's not in there. So... Gladfully, in America, everybody becomes more aware of allergies, and also, people with autism or ADHD, etc., who want to have a certain gluten-free diet. So, a lot of products will tell gluten-free or casein-free, and etc. So, this makes it just a little bit easier to just grab it off the shelf because it's written in bold: gluten-free cookies, gluten-free bread or pasta. So
you advise starting by looking at the overall diet and seeing, is there enough good quality protein? And we're talking about animal-based proteins such as eggs and meat. Is that the type of protein? Or from beans?
Well, if you start with, it depends on what you want to focus on. If you first want to focus, for example, on the casein and the gluten-free diet, which is very relevant for autism, you want to first try the dairy, the milk, and then the gluten. If you want to look at ADHD or autism or anything else that is maybe affecting your child, for example, difficulty concentrating or hyperactive, etc., you may want to try to also focus on other things such as the proteins, and that is actually coming from the blood group diet. You can look up what blood group your child has. When your child has an O type, it is a type that needs a lot of, may need a lot of proteins. When it's an A type, it may not need so much proteins to get the energy out of the foods. So you sometimes may want to look at what blood type, how is my child responding to maybe more the proteins or maybe more the carbs, so to see what is it that feeds your child and gives your child good energy or makes it hyperactive.
Yeah, that's good. So you're talking about, first of all, having, so my original question about protein was, do you advise animal sources or beans, you know, the vegetable sources, or a combination of both, or do you think that's something that you just need to try and see what your child responds to?
Yeah, beans are definitely a very healthy source of proteins, and nuts are very healthy. And if you want to stay vegan, and if you don't, then you can, of course, use meat and fish and maybe do the, like, chicken, skinless chicken, or if you prefer red meat. And it, again, depends on how, if you want to keep it vegan or vegetarian or stay away from the red meat. But those are all really good protein sources.
Mm, yeah, you know, there's a lot to diet. So first off, I guess you're saying take a log and keep track of what your child is currently eating, and then look for these red flag foods, such as not enough protein, or maybe not enough of the right kind of protein, too much refined sugar, and gluten. See what seems to leap out at you. And then start perhaps by putting more protein in the diet, because some kids just avoid that kind of food. They're more into the the pasta and the candy and stuff. Maybe start by trying to just improve the diet from a general perspective like that. Less sugar, more protein, more vegetables and fruits, and then see, keep a log of the behavior, see what happens. And then if you're still seeing some concerns, try removing dairy. And give that about a month, and then try removing gluten. Is that the basic outline here?
That's right. And while you were doing that, I realized that perhaps maybe it's a good idea to share with the listeners also one of the approaches that I use, how to teach a child to actually learn how to eat a different type of food, because a lot of children do have a preference for sweets and maybe staying away from the veggies and things like that. Because that, a couple of things that really, that may be very helpful is first of all, when a child learns to eat a new type of food, it may take about 15 to 20 times, that research showed that, before they actually start liking it.
Wow.
So if you introduce a new food, then try to always have a tiny bit of that on the plate, and then have something else that is preferred and is still a food item also on there on the plate. And then ask the child to, if it really does not like the food, to just only kiss it or smell it or lick it. Just that's it, nothing else. And then after the child does that, then it gets a bite of the preferred food. And every time when the child does that, you give a praise, a lot of reinforcement, and you increase the amount every time and then go towards taking a bite and then still using that reward. And every time the child is starting to eat more and more out of it, you reduce the rewards, and you increase the amount of food that you want the child to eat, such as more vegetables or certain gluten-free products, or, for example, the replacers of milk products, such as almond milk and et cetera. And that way you can just teach your child how to learn to eat other healthy or organic foods that may be more beneficial to their system.
That's brilliant. I was going to ask you about that. That's a brilliant approach. Well, what do you advise for kids when they're out? You know, they go to school, they go out to a movie, whatever. Do you have some tips for helping them not feel so left out if they can't eat the pizza or can't eat, what's that, the horrible cafeteria or something like that?
Yeah, and that's really important that they don't feel left out, especially in the age group of between 6 and 12 year old, or even beyond that, starting around 5 until maybe 18 years old. That probably is a very important aspect. And it, again, it will take extra work from the...
Lillian, I hate to interrupt you, but yeah. You're fading in and out. Is
oh.
Your phone... Yeah.
Oh,
it's been doing this for the whole show, but it's gotten particularly bad right now.
Oh, okay. How is it now?
Well, we're just going to have to try it. See if there's... I don't know if there's a connection loose or something, but you're fading in and out.
Oh, okay, well, I hope it will be good, and otherwise
okay.
I need to hang up and call in again.
Well, sounds good right now. Let's give it a try.
Okay. It will require some extra labor for the parent or perhaps from the older child, but always try to see if you can replace that food item that will be there in a social environment, such as the pizza or the cake. You can make those items dairy-free or casein-free. It's just something that you may need to go to a different store for, or you have to bake it yourself.
That's true. It's the getting around the gluten that's so hard, and I know this because
yeah.
I try to avoid wheat, and I tell you, I can't do it because, first off, I like some of the foods, and, you know, you just get some pleasure out of certain foods. I restrict it to a couple of days a week, but still, you know, it is brutal in this wheat-intensive environment to avoid it and still have much fun with your food. It's so hard in America.
Yeah, I agree. My child actually has allergies, and autism actually have a lot of similarities with the gut system that is... triggered by a hyperactive immune system and difficulties processing foods. So I know myself how challenging it can be to find the replacements, but gladfully it is there. It just takes a little adjustment in the beginning.
Yeah, that's for sure. It does take some knowledge. You have to research and figure out, first of all, what foods you have to avoid, and then you have to come up with good substitutes, and then pray that your child will learn to like them. And yeah, I agree.
Yeah.
I sympathize because I have had many diets in my life. I've been on a macrobiotic diet. I've been on a blood diet, blood type diet, like you mentioned. I've been on more of them than I can even remember off the top of my head. It's very, very challenging. And, you know, in the end, finally, I can't stick on any of the very severe ones like that. It is so hard to do that in America, especially when you have control of your own diet. If you're a child and your parents are doling out your food, it's a little easier, I think. But when you're an adult and you get to go to the store yourself, pretty challenging. Well, okay, let's go on to our next area. So you were talking about exercise and sleep. You know, that's important for everybody. What kinds of things can you suggest in your holistic approach for working with special needs kids in those areas?
So exercise and sleep, and just take a real quick step back, because I remember that I also want to mention that I always advise people for the diet to go to a specialist or to a homeopath or a naturopath who can teach them more also about taking like extra vitamins or any... especially for the autism, and any inflammatory vitamins, such as vitamin B5, B6, fish oil, beta carotene that's in beets, anything that will help reduce the inflammation. So also those things may be a good advice to try. So getting towards the exercise and sleep. So how does it work? Again, I always advise or I always analyze myself what is going on in the exercise pattern and the sleep pattern. So again, a parent can use a log. Like, okay, this is what the pattern is. Or maybe there isn't a pattern. Sometimes my child goes at around this time to bed, wakes up around this and that time, during the night and in the morning, and this is the amount of exercise. And again, what are the behaviors that same day after the exercise and during the day of this amount of sleep? So when that's being analyzed, then I always like to see. And I've written some blogs, actually, on my website about that. If somebody wants to read more about that in depth, that's on www.yourclearpath.com. It's more about the sleep pattern. Like, I always advise, especially for the children who are going to school, between, let's say 5 and maybe still 18 years old, to just see how there can be a sleep pattern created, especially for the younger kids. A lot of sleep is so important. And when they go to bed, like on a consistent, with a regular pattern, and be able to just do that throughout the week when they go to school, then there may be so much benefits from that. There are a lot of kids who I've worked with who don't have set bedtimes. And who are so tired in the morning. I mean, I was working with kids from 6 years old who just go to bed between 10 and 11. And that is just too late for them. Their system just needs to go to, they need to go to bed around 8 or 9 and have a full night of 10, 11 hours. For the exercise part, also that can contribute a lot to all these behaviors when there's no exercise, that there's low energy. When there's low energy, there's difficulty concentrating, difficulty focusing, children may have a tendency to eat a lot of sugar because sugar gives them a burst of energy. They feel energized, but then usually the blood sugar level drops and they get even more tired. So looking at what is the exercise level and what is it that they can increase to at least exercise once per week, and where they can just get more energy or get the energy out, but at the same time really work with social relationships and be able to listen to a coach who gives instructions, feel being part of a group, and a lot of positive things can be triggered by just participating in exercise.
I really like that idea of at least once a week getting in with a group where you're being directed to do something like dance class or football or anything that your child would enjoy, skating, anything like that. That's great because it addresses so many areas of development that kids need. I like that idea. Well, you know, one thing that really intrigued me as I was learning about your approach is that you also advocate yoga or breathing or meditation in your work with families. Tell us some more about why you advocate that and how that works.
Yeah, I am very excited about that part as well, because I think using a holistic approach allows me, and of course if a parent uses it, allows a parent to just use so many resources. And I think that for every child, for every human being, an individual approach is the best, because everybody is a different person and needs something different. And looking at the yoga or the meditation or the breathing part, that is something that is so essential for us human beings, to just breathe. And when we grow up, a lot of times we learn to breathe in a different way, or actually in a way that challenges us a lot. And that is the high chest breathing. A lot of times when people are in fear or have anxiety or are nervous, their whole body shuts down, that the breathing goes into the chest. So when you place your hand, for example, now on your belly, you can already really notice, like, how do I breathe? Does my belly go in when I breathe? I mean, go out when I breathe in and go in when I breathe out? Or do I hardly feel my belly moving? Is it my chest? So what happens is when also children or adults, when they become more aware of how they breathe, a lot of behaviors may change when they learn to breathe different. Because when you breathe through the chest, a lot of times the oxygen gets away from the brain and fearful thoughts, anxiety thoughts, nervosity thoughts are being triggered because you cannot think that straight anymore. And I call it the gremlin, but I can also use it as the monkey mind. That is the mind that just chatters and chatters and will say, you can do it. Look at all those people, they're laughing at you, and all those irrational thoughts that are happening. And when you really are able at that moment to focus on your belly breathing and just to really take a five second count breath in, or maybe longer, and through the belly, and let your belly really expand when you breathe in, and then let your belly go in, like really let your belly go move all the way, maybe flat, and like again count to five or seven and breathe through your nose. And when you can do that and really practice that over and over, you are able to balance yourself again. You will notice that your thoughts may become more quiet because you're focusing on your breathing, and the feeling of anxiety and nervosity may disappear. And it's amazing what I've seen, how just this one basic exercise may already create so much change in a human being just by this simple exercise. And it can go further by the yoga exercises in where I try to increase the awareness of the body, because a lot of times our tension or anxieties or fears or any of that are in the body. You know, maybe if you check it with yourself right now, you may feel it in your chest or your belly area or your throat. Everybody may have a different spot. So when you locate that, you can really, when you go to your breathing exercise or your yoga, you can focus with your breathing on the areas where you feel tension. So while you're breathing and breathing, you can really clear that tension in your body, and you just feel that it's just loosening up and feeling better. It's like giving yourself an internal massage. And sometimes after just 1 minute, you may already feel a huge difference from the beginning until the end.
That's great. Do you have in your blog, or could you do right now, some tips for parents on how they can help their child learn these techniques?
Yes, they can just check it out again on that yourclearpath.com, and there are a lot of, it's under the blog section, and there are a lot of just ideas or articles about how to deal with certain challenges, whether it's defeating thoughts, learning how to be more positive, or learning to let go of anxiety. And a lot goes, of course, using a holistic approach, but also using the breathing techniques.
You know, I'm very much a proponent of all the things you're talking about today. I spend the first hour when I wake up with a kind of a meditation session where I'm consciously focusing on my breathing and where I'm doing what I call self statements. These are statements that I, you know, use to program my body to have my body accept the goals that I'm working towards. And the reason you have to have your body accept those goals is because we all have baggage. I've lived on this earth a long time, and so I have lots of self-limiting beliefs and lots of fears and self-doubts and you know, gremlins and monkey chatter of my own. And so I use this time, and all the time during the day, I do this very frequently, I program in these statements. I call them self-statements because they're about me, and they're things such as, you know, You're worthy. You're deserving. You know, you should have these things. You know, I use statements very specific to me, and I'm going to share exactly what they are because that's kind of private. But, and these are things that I use to quiet those little cellular hijackings, I call them, because our body, as you said, we store our tension, we store our disbelief in ourselves somewhere in our body, and when we have traumas or experiences that really harm us and hurt us and get us to doubt that we're worthy and decent people, we store that someplace in our tissues, and that's where disease comes from, and it also holds us back from living the life we're meant to live.
Right, and that's the beautiful thing about when you raise a child is being nurtured and learns many beliefs, and when a child learns a lot of beliefs that it is not worthy and it's not good enough, that is what they will know, and that is what they will have in the back of their mind until they grow up and become strong enough to think the opposite of all the things that you just said, Dr. Carey. And I think that is one of the most beautiful challenges that we as parents have, to not only teach ourselves but also our children that they are worthy, that they're beautiful, that if they make a mistake, they are not bad. It's just a behavior that we want to help them to do different. They are not bad individuals because they do something that is not appropriate or that we think is not appropriate. By helping them, to just help them with a good self-esteem and reinforcing any trial and error that they are doing, any step that they make towards a certain goal, by just being their coach and helping them to develop themselves, is maybe detrimental and so important for the rest of their lives. And of course, they may still have their gremlins and monkey minds, and they may still need that maybe hour in the morning to just give themselves a mantra or do breathing exercises, but they may have a stronger core, be more in balance because they got so much reinforcement and support.
Yes, I agree. Well put, well put. Well, you know, we're wrapping up our first segment. Next, I want to go into that area that's so crucial, that parent-child relationship. You just started in on it, helping your child believe in themselves. I want to talk about this whole area and the holistic approach that you advocate of the parent-child relationships. But before we do that, I want to remind everybody that we're talking to Lillian Campbell. We're talking, obviously, about holistic approaches for kids with special needs. And I'm Dr. Carey, and this is Special Kids School Talk. If you like what you're hearing, click on the Facebook and Twitter links. Share Special Kids School Talk with your friends. Okay, Lillian, let's get into the area of parent-child relationships. So what kind of problems should parents be on the lookout for in their dealings with their kids? You alluded it to one of them when you said, stay positive. Help them know that because they make a mistake, there's nothing bad about them. So what kinds of things do you help parents and kids do that help kids move forward?
Well, on the lookout, I definitely think looking for, of course, how is the communication? How are we listening to each other? How are we communicating with each other? Is there a lot of power conflict, a lot of ego conflict? And am I approaching, if you have several children, am I approaching them all the same? Or do I really take the individual into account, that every child is different? And then looking, if you detect any of those challenges, see what you would like to focus on, if there's something you would like to change. And I think if you want to, what was your second question, Dr. Carey?
Well, I'm not sure which was second, but what kinds of problems do parents often not notice in their relationship with their child that might be actually sabotaging not only their relationship, but their child's moving forward, either academically or with peers? Sometimes parents and kids get into this kind of dynamic that's kind of counterproductive. And sometimes it takes stepping back and noticing how you're reacting to your child in order to break that cycle. What are some of the places, some of the kinds of typical problems that you've noticed in your working with your parents?
Well, typical problems is definitely that there is a barrier, that that the parent and the child are not understanding each other. I see a lot of parents who are very much focused to what they want to accomplish for their child. For example, they want their child to achieve this and that academically, and they have all these goals set out. And there are some parents who are very, very worried about the future, who don't live much in the present, but who are constantly, constantly working so hard on changing whatever is needed for the child. And at the same time, they're losing connection with the child. And the child is not able to communicate his wants and needs because the parents are too much focused on what they want. And I can see that especially, for example, with low-functioning autistic children or better say, children who have a very low IQ and are not able to do a lot of tasks in an academic level, that the parents are so focused to the academic part while the adaptive skills, for example, that area is not looked at. And I think whether it's autism,
sorry,
ADHD,
Lily,
sorry,
Lynn, don't mean to interrupt you. What do you mean by adaptive skills?
Oh, adaptive skills, I mean how to function in society. How can I order a piece of bread or a cup of coffee? How can I use my credit card? How can I apply first aid on myself? It's all the self-help, independent living, communication, safety skills, basic vocational skills. All that would be adaptive skills.
Yes, okay, good.
Yeah. And so all that is important. And I think the most important thing for a parent with any child, whether they have a diagnosis or not, is that they are able to listen to what the child really needs and to stay focused to the present. Because as a child, also a parent, we have a lot of gremlins, a big monkey mind, a lot of stressors. When the parent is trying to teach the child how to be more relaxed, how to get rid of anxiety or hyperactivity, then it's really important that the parent models that. If you model that behavior, that's how your child learns. When you yell at your child and you don't want your child to yell, that's not how a child will learn. That's very conflicting. So when you focus your attention on your development as well, you can model a lot by not being very active in constantly teaching and teaching something in an active way. You can just do it naturally by modeling.
I absolutely agree with you. In fact, I've done radio shows and interviews myself on other radio shows about that exact same idea, that you develop your parenting skills by developing your own personal sense of worth. It's only from that standpoint of you thinking of yourself as a worthy, deserving person that you can then have that kind of generosity of spirit that makes a good parent. At least that's my view.
Yes, if we want children, a lot of parents say, you don't respect me, but it's very important that a parent respects a child, that a parent says thank you or says sorry when they do something to the child. It's like reciprocal, just like adult with an adult. I think it's good to do that the same thing with your child because you're modeling the appropriate behavior. That's how a child learns.
Yes, and I liked your example of how you don't yell at a child if you want them to learn not to yell. Kids are learning how we act. That's how they're learning to be themselves, even more than we realize so much of the time. I agree that that's often something that parents don't remember, that kids are learning to be exactly like them in terms of the way they act and think. Then keeping the lines of communication open. And I so like the way you emphasized making sure that you're in tune with your child's needs and desires and wants. Every human being, at least this is my feeling too, every human being makes their own life go forward dramatically better when they're allowed and nurtured to believe in themselves, to believe that what they like and they care about matters. You know, even for the kids who are lower functioning, even if we think about the low-functioning kids, the high-functioning kids, if they're allowed to pursue their areas of interest and passion, that's when their lives are going to unlock to the limit that they're able to unlock them. It's when we stop them from finding their passions. That's when things go badly for kids.
Right, and always being able to support that and being able to, a child will share so much more with a parent when you're able to listen. Just take 10 minutes out of your day, or maybe longer, to just listen to your child, to just show reflective listening, not judge, not say what was wrong or bad or correct. Just listen to what your child has to say. Because a lot of times they have to say, they want to say so much, but they're fearful for judgment or rejection. And I think by using reflective listening, meaning just say, I see, I understand, or I hear you, the child feels like, oh, wow, I can share. And then the relationship already can start to grow or change because it, when somebody feels heard, I hear you, then they feel significant and a lot of things may change. And I think the same is when there's conflict, how you deal with conflict with a parent and a child. And I think, you know, with young children, it's often different than with older children. With young children, look at clearpath.com. That's like a 10-step list. How to deal with a tantrum.
Sorry, Lillian, your phone cut out again. I think you were telling the audience that there's something with 10 steps on your blog.
Yeah, it's for younger kids, there's like a 10-step list on yourclearpath.com where parents can see, like, how can I deal when my child has a tantrum. For older kids, I think it's really important that there's always communication. For example, that instead of course, yelling, cursing, judging each other, that there will be first, that it's like a three-step approach, that you first tell each other, you know, I observe this, this is how it makes me feel, this is what I need from you, is that what you can do for me? So it's like a four-step approach.
That's good. Give us an example. Take us through an actual example.
So I observed that you closed the door when I was still talking to you. That makes me feel like it's not important to you what I have to say. I need, or I would like for you to just stand here and just wait 1 minute until I'm done talking and then close the door and go to your room. Can you do that next time?
Mm-hmm. Now, is that for the younger kid or the older kid?
That is for, the younger kids, you can check out on my blog. The older kids, that would be more an appropriate approach, you know, when, let's say, around 10, 12 years old.
Okay, and yes. So I like that approach very much. I think we really need to model for kids appropriate behavior, but also appropriate sharing of your own internal feelings. I think it's quite appropriate for kids, particularly kids on the autism spectrum, to be told how someone else is feeling in regard to what they just did. That's often a connection they don't make.
No, that's right.
You know, this is a related question. Do you have some tips for parents if they lose patience with their child? Clearly, that's one way to approach it. I mean, that may be your answer right there, but do you have some additional tips?
Yes, absolutely, and they may be very old-fashioned, and some maybe not, but they still help. And when depends on if you lose patience, it depends. Some parents have the tendency to scream or to just not think rational, and etc. And often emotion is there, and when there's emotion, you're not able to think really straight anymore. It's just your emotion talking. Best thing is at that moment to say, I need to walk away for a moment, or to just distract your focus in the room. For example, just look at something else, look at different objects in the room, drink a glass of water, or focus on your breathing, your abdominal breathing. Or just do some activity. Go wash the dishes, excuse yourself, and say, I will be back at this and that time. And I always advise, like afterwards, just always reflect back what happened in that situation. And at that moment, and Dr. Carey, you mentioned it earlier about your morning ritual, it is really a great method at that moment to prepare for next time how you will do it different. When you do that mentally, you create a situation in your mind, and you create it in the most perfect way. How would you respond differently so you won't be again in the losing patience situation? Once you practice mentally, you are actually already doing half the work because your brains will remember. Your brain will remember next time when you do it. It's really funny. There was a research done with people who were thinking about doing belly exercises in the evening. And they were compared to people who were doing actually exercises. And after 1 month, they found out that these people who were only doing it mentally actually increased their belly muscles. So the mind is so strong. The mind can prepare you so well for a situation when you just practice it within your mind.
Absolutely. You know, there's actually a lot of research also in the sports area, too, about athletes who practice in their head and who just practice with their bodies, and those who practice in their head, absolutely, and with their bodies both, tend to excel as opposed to those who just practice with their bodies. And that's the reason, you know, that I advocate so much getting in touch with who you are as a person, because you can unlock your potential to be a great parent when you think about what an amazing God-given creature you are. I think we in America tend to try to de-emphasize how great we are. I know that sounds ridiculous because this is America. Everybody thinks they're great, but not in the way I mean. We're creatures of God. We're amazing, and we have the capacity to heal and generate and create beyond our wildest expectations, and we tend to forget that, and we tend to lock our kids into a mentality of just so low of a ability to create in their lives. That's what I find so sad. Okay, I'm going to get off of my soapbox for a moment.
Well, I'm happy. Well, Dr. Carey, I agree. I'm happy that you tell that. I mean, how often am I asking my clients, let's check in with your intuition.
Yeah.
And they don't know where that is. When I ask them, where do you feel it, they don't know. And intuition is something that's so huge when you're a kid, but often it's being taken away a lot of times by the environment, by everybody around us, who would tell us, no, you cannot do this, no, you have to do this, society tells you this, and we should not be listening to our intuition anymore. But at the moment when I start focusing, okay, let's identify your intuition, where is your gut feeling that will tell you this is it? And we practice with it, and we identify, we celebrate when the client is actually following the intuition, then the whole world opens up. Because the intuition, the gut, that is not something that will judge you and say you're bad, you're wrong, you don't look good, you're not this and that. That's the mind, that's the ego who will constantly say that. And I think a child itself is born and is so pure, and at the moment they start developing, it depends on all the people around the child, how he or she will develop him or herself. And I think that's a beautiful role that we all have, not only to focus on ourselves, but also on our children and how to help them stimulate to follow their dreams, to follow their creativity, to be who they are and not who society wants them to be. Because I think a lot of neurotic tics that people may have, like touching their nose, wiggling their fingers, twirling their hair, or closing their eyes rapidly, or whatever it is, a lot of neurotic things are coming from, I think, suppressed things, suppressed feelings, emotions, suppressed thoughts that we were not allowed to do when we were kids or maybe adults. let them explore in the freedom as much as they can. Give them choices whenever is possible. There's not always a room for a choice, but there are tons of moments that there is room for choice, and the choice gives a child the feeling of freedom, freedom of expression.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. I couldn't have said that better at all. Kids absolutely have been taught in our culture not to respect themselves in the area of intuition, in the area of how brilliant they can be, how decent they are, how miraculous life is. Those are not American values. There's so much I love about America. But I'll tell you, those things have been captured more in the Eastern philosophies than they have in our American philosophy.
Right, absolutely. I agree. And mm-hmm. I think it's religion and it's the society and, yeah, different cultures treat that different. I think I'm from Europe, I'm from Holland, and I think a lot of kids are also growing up without having always that much choice and a lot of freedom for expression. I think the whole law of the freedom of expression is sometimes going towards freedom of criticism. Mm-hmm. And that I don't think that that's always needed.
You know, I'm so glad you said that. America has gotten to be, in a lot of ways, a very critical society. You turn on any news show these days, and you'll hear somebody trashing the president or anybody else in authority. And I think it's gotten to be where, here's my minute of fame. I'm going to make myself look better in my own eyes by trashing anything I can around me. I you know, this is what our show is about, so I'll get off of this, but I really think America has gotten to be too much of a blame-oriented, nasty kind of society.
Anyway. Yeah.
I think for a few minutes that we have left, it would be really helpful if you took us through a case study kind of somebody who you have used this kind of approach with. Maybe start with one of your kids and talk a little bit. I think we really went into the dietary area, so you can kind of go quickly through how you help them with diet. But then maybe show us, you know, how you help them with exercise. Maybe help the parent and child rebuild their relationship. Maybe help the child develop some peer relationships.
Yes, I will do that. And once again, on yourclearpath.com, there are a couple of case studies or more like the general ones in where people can read more if they would like to. But there is definitely, I have a lot of people who I want to bring up, but I will bring up just one student. Student who actually, or client who, when I started with this person, so let's call this person Peter. Mm-hmm. His diet was basically a lot of refined sugar. It's very limited in vegetables and fruit. Maybe one fruit, no vegetables, rice, just only rice, and sometimes some chicken nuggets. There was no routine with the sleeping, no peer relationships outside of the school, limited speech, and a lot of tantrums and aggressive behaviors.
Wow.
And, first what I like to do, and that's really out of my therapy approach, I like to look at solutions that will be the most easiest to implement and will give the most quickest results before we go to the things that may take a little bit more effort. So first I always take an assessment of everything, what I just mentioned earlier. How is the diet? How is the exercise? How is everything? And how does it all affect each other? So we started with changing the diet. That's the thing that we can do the most quickest. And we use the approach I mentioned earlier about using rewards. And having the parent implement this every day, 7 days per week, and then keeping a log, like which foods are introduced, and helping the parent, how do you reinforce your child? How do you introduce a new food? For example, a one-on-one ratio. First, one non-preferred, and then using the one preferred food, and then increasing the ratio of the non-preferred food to two, and the preferred food stays to one. And every time we increase the non-preferred food until the child was eating more and more vegetables, salads, fruits, decreasing the refined sugar, replacing it for healthy snacks, etc. The sleep pattern, we were able to quickly change that by just decreasing the time every time by half an hour. And again, using strong reinforcers. So the reinforcer is key. You can use a token economy. You can schedule days of the week, and then use stickers, money, smiley faces, whatever it is, when the child actually does go to bed on time, and then it gets a reward at the end of the day. Doing a board game with the whole family, watching his favorite show, at the end of the week, a little toy at Target, whatever it is. So that was the bed routine. We started working on the speech, and the parent can really help the child by using prompts, using preferred items to actually help the child to request the preferred items, because, and then getting access to it by modeling, sometimes using video modeling, showing a video with the appropriate behavior of how to talk, how to interact with peers.
That's cool.
And again, yeah, again, a lot of reinforcement. And at the same time, also working on how to interact with your sibling and with peers. And we first do it in a safe environment in the home by already setting up, like, role models. So, for example, the parent is a child and interacts with the child, and then teaching, reinforcing in a safe environment. And then when the child feels good, we will go to a park and play and prompt the child. At the same time, we were working on breathing. So when there were tantrums, we were trying, helping the parent to identify, this is an antecedent, this is a trigger, this is how your child acts. Now, it's very important that you either use plant ignoring, don't put too much attention to it, or redirect the child, etc. And those were the 10 steps, for example, that I posted on yourclearpath.com.
Mm-hmm.
Or communicate different, identify feelings for the child, and at the same time working with the parent, like really helping also the parent deal with changing behaviors. How can a parent become more? This parent did not have a lot of patience. So I was teaching this parent to learn to be more patient, to focus on the breathing, to take more time out for himself, to identify his, or there was actually the father, his passions, to focus more on that. And he became a more pleasant, more happy person. The interaction became naturally just better. So at the end, it took quite some months to, of course, accomplish all the goals. A lot of differences were accomplished. This child became happier. There was much more communication, interaction. You saw the self-esteem was getting higher because it was exploring in different areas we never worked on, but naturally the child became just more self-confident to get interest in those areas. The parents felt more happier and was more in tune with his intuition, in tune with the child, what the child needs were, how to communicate, how to listen to the child. So I was very happy when we completed all the sessions, and sometimes we still have a check-in session, but there was just a lot of work accomplished, and it was wonderful. And I always try to use resources in the community. The resources can be an osteopath, a naturopath, or a physical therapist, speech therapist. All these people may be so helpful to just accomplish a great change in somebody's life or family's life.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you. Holistic approach is the way to go. Absolutely. Not that I wasn't convinced beforehand, but you've convinced me even more.
Beautiful. Great.
Well, I've really enjoyed the show today, Lillian. I know that you have given your website out many times, but let's give it out again. It's yourclearpath.com. You can get lots of information on Lillian Campbell's blog about the information she talked about today, about 10 steps, about ways to... You fill us in. What kinds of things do you have out there on the blog?
So it is a website, so it's all my information, and there are all kinds of articles and blogs. It's for children, for parents, for just individuals. It can be about how to learn more about career, how to learn how to decrease depression, anxiety. It's about autism. It's dealing with tantrums, potty training. It's very diverse.
That's excellent. Well, thanks so much, Lillian. You've been a great guest. I've really enjoyed the show today.
Thank you, Dr. Kay.
Now, in the weeks to come, I've got some great shows lined up for my listeners. Our next show is going to be July 15th. I'm going to be speaking with a parent who has attention deficit disorder. Now, I'll be talking with her about challenges that she's had as being a parent with special needs. She's also developed a unique program to address attention deficit disorder that she's going to be sharing with us. And then, again, on July 17th, I'll be speaking with a parent of a student with special needs. This man will be sharing his amazing story of the difficulty that his child experienced in school and this parent's quest to see that he obtained educational justice for his son. Please also check out my archive shows. I've got excellent shows on topics such as strengthening family relationships in special needs families. This goes along so well today with today's show. I also got great shows on topics such as helping kids get control of their difficult behavior, building relationships with kids on the autism spectrum, navigating the IEP maze, and the nuts and bolts of psychological testing. We really got a theme going here. I've got some great shows to help parents. And I want to let my listeners know that you can connect with Lillian Campbell by going to my website at blogtalkradio.com/specialkidsschooltalk. You've been listening to Special Kids School Talk on blogtalkradio.com, and I'm your host, Dr. Carey. Please share Special Kids School Talk with your friends. Help other parents raise successful kids. If you want to find out more about helping kids with special needs, such as learning disabilities, to become more successful students, visit my website at millereducationalexcellence.com. Till next time, everybody, enjoy your time with your child.
Thank you for joining us today on Special Kids School Talk. For more information about Dr. Miller, please go to her website at millereducationalexcellence.com. You can also follow her on Facebook or Twitter. Just click the icons on the Blog Talk Radio page open in front of you. Remember, too, to check the archives for any shows you may have missed. Thank you again, and we'll see you next time on Special Kids School Talk.